Welcome back here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. A cool show today, Faisal. We talked about a bunch of different things, and you know, the show's called More Than Money for a reason. You know, this particular season is often driven by you know, different things like charity and giving back, and you know, family and so on and so
forth.
Very
important. Yep.
At the top of the hour, we talked a little bit about the water cooler and some of the things that are going on and strategy and whatnot. I got to tell you, there's another area that I was hoping that we could address today. And I would say over the past month or even quarter, lots of questions about exchange-traded funds and what's the difference between passive and active investing.
Okay.
And so, you know, we talk about asset allocation, generally speaking, you know, stocks, bonds, what percentage of your portfolio. But there's lots of questions around and lots of education required, I think, around the difference, the different styles and different approaches you can take to if you want to be stock exposed, as an example. Right?
Sure.
Do you own the S&P 500 index passively through an exchange-traded fund? Do you own an exchange-traded fund that is actively focused on S&P 500 types of companies? Right? These kinds of things, people are confused about that.
Okay.
Confused around costs. Right? Everybody thinks that exchange-traded funds are cheap. Some can be in terms of fees. Some don't even know there's fees built in there. Some are expensive if they're active. So I thought we would maybe just talk a little bit about different approaches at different times. So here's one of the things I'm concerned about. As exchange-traded funds became popular, more and more money piled into exchange-traded funds. Let's just talk about the S&P 500.
So right now, 45% of the trades or the money being moved through the S&P 500 index or through the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ is through passive investments or through exchange-traded funds.
Okay. Let's think of the implications of that. This is interesting, right? When you put a dollar into an exchange-traded fund that is investing into the S&P 500 index, you are putting some proportion or some portion of that dollar into every single one of those 500 companies. It's a market-weighted, market cap-weighted index, so each stock gets a piece of it. Now, the question is, as all of these companies get bid up in price as more money just indiscriminately flows into them, so there's not any fundamental decisions being made here, right? So you could have one of those 500 companies way overvalued.
Correct.
Based on money just going in on a proportionate basis. So passively speaking, what happens on these kinds of investments is you could be putting money into, you know, overvalued companies, so on and so forth. The averages work out. The other thing that happens is you start to pile money in on, I'm going to pick on technology for a minute because it's had a very difficult quarter based on valuations, right? So as technology becomes big technology companies become a bigger percentage of the S&P 500, you're piling a bunch of money into that when you go passively.
Okay.
Right? So there's, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. What I'm saying is people need to educate themselves about some of the implications of what they're doing.
How the ETF works.
Right, what they're doing and where their money is going to.
Yep.
Okay, so the exchange-traded fund, a mutual fund, a hedge fund, a stock, a bond, these are all just financial instruments, right? Different tools, if you will, in the toolbox that you can pull out to accomplish different things, right? But is passive or active? It's an interesting conversation. Is low-cost passive exposure to the S&P 500 the right thing? Maybe. Right? I mean, it's like any other tool.
But here's the premise. The premise is that active money managers cannot outperform the index over long term.
Right.
Therefore, why pay those active management fees when you can just buy the index and outperform?
Yep.
That's the premise that everybody hangs their investment philosophy on that.
Right.
Until the markets fall.
Right.
And when the markets fall 10, 20, 30, 40%, passive investing is no longer acquired. For example, the S&P 500 index ETFs, the major three on the U.S. market, were aggressively sold in October.
Right.
That's counterintuitive. If you believe over the long term that the S&P 500 will outperform all money managers, then why sell it?
Right.
Hold on to it and let it ride. It's because the volatility is not the part of the decision-making process. It is purely the index and the net performance at the very end. And unfortunately, our industry just shows what the rate of return was of the investment over the 1, 3, 5, 10 years as an example.
Okay.
What they don't show is what's the best year, what's the worst year,
right,
what's the average or maximum drawdown you can expect in a given year.
Right.
In history of that investment. that will give you an understanding of what the worst case scenario looks like.
Right.
Like, we've seen investments that have done fantastic over the last 10 years, but have a 30 or 40% swing on the downside.
Right.
We wouldn't touch it for our clients because it's not within their risk tolerance.
Right. So it's whether it's suitable or not. So this is interesting, though. We often talk about index exposure on the way up. Remember, you get index exposure on the way down, too. So when you're doing your analysis, again, I'm not saying which is better or worse. That's for every individual investor to decide what's suitable. But on the downside, risk management becomes important, particularly in a late cycle trade, right? So depending on where you think we are in the economic cycle right now, okay, there's going to be companies and sectors that are more grossly overvalued than others and defensive and, you know, all those different kinds of things. So
yep.
So a manager, an active management, is not just about beating on the upside. I mean, that's wonderful if it happens, but it's also about beating on the downside. Mitigating risk on the downside. And often that can be a more valuable tool, that risk mitigation, a more valuable tool to people in retirement, right? Because as we talk about in our seminars, the farther you fall, the harder it is to get back. And time is not your friend at this stage of life, right? So risk mitigation becomes an important tool.
I was listening to Philip Peterson, one of our contributors to our show, and he mentioned that the markets or investing is like a game of tennis.
Okay.
It's not the number of aces you get in a game of tennis that wins the game.
Right.
It's the amount of unforced errors that you take will determine if you win or lose a game.
Huh. It's a good analogy.
And that was what really struck with me. When it's the unforced errors. It's the emotional reaction. It's just doing what the herd's doing or what you hear on, you know, on the media or see in the news. It's not sticking to a fundamental viewpoint and understanding that what are you agreeing to? Are you agreeing to whatever the return will be the return at any risk? Or are you trying to minimize your risk? And when you transition to or live in retirement, you need to zone in on what volatility you can accept, not what rate of return you want. Because
right.
we're getting people calling us up today saying, I want 6, 7, 8% rate of returns. What do you got?
Right.
Well, can you take 30, 40% volatility potentially?
Right.
No. Well,
right.
Then you can't get that kind of return, generally speaking.
Right.
So you need to understand that there's some sort of volatility exposed or risk exposed to a return. And to actually define that for people, they're having a hard time. And I think the next 10 years are not going to be as easy as the last 10 years.
No, I'm with you. And there's right? been a complacency around risk, quite frankly, because, Faisal, in the last, oh gosh, you could probably call it a decade, we really haven't had a tremendous amount of volatility. There have been bouts of it.
Sure.
Right. But even this year with two bouts of, call it a 10% pullback from peak to trough on the S&P, that's not even correction territory, right? That's just normal stuff. But there's a complacency because things have tended just to go up for a long period of time. And I guess I just want to raise the alarm bells a little bit that people are, don't forget about that second half of the equation.
I think people would be better educated if they walk into their advisor and sit down with them and say, here's the amount of volatility I'm willing to take.
Right.
What's the rate of return that I can receive based upon this volatility? Versus this is how much return I need. And we'll really not play on the volatility until it comes, because everybody's yep. scared when the markets fall.
Yep.
But if you knew that it was going to happen, you would just kind of go with it. Kind of like when you're on the top of the roller coaster
right.
and you know you're going down. You know you're going down. Like
right.
it's not a surprise.
Right.
You might be scared. You might be, you know, have a different feeling, but you know it's happening.
And look forwards, not backwards. Right. It's really important. You made an interesting comment. I think the next 10 years are going to be challenging.
Absolutely.
Right. So I agree with you.
I love. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah. No, I get
it's
it.
Fun.
But I don't think the next 10 years looks like the last 10 years. And so be careful when you're forecasting forward that you don't anchor to what happened in the past. Make sure you're looking forward and you're realistically assessing what the risks and opportunities are there going forward. Okay, we've got a seminar coming up. We should remind everybody about that.
We're going to talk about the risks and why the next 10 years are going to be different than the last 10 years, and what are the concerns, and how are we going to actually profit and protect in these types of markets? More importantly, bulletproof your retirement on Tuesday, December 4th, 7 p.m. at the Oak Ridge Co-op Wine, Spirits, and Beer. You need to reserve your seats. Give us a call, 966-8400, or go on our website at morethanmoneyradio.com.
And don't forget that you can access any of the past segments that we talk about on More Than Money at morethanmoneyradio.com, or you can have them directly delivered to you by searching for More Than Money CHQR on Apple Podcast or in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of More Than Money on 770 CHQR.
David Popowicz and Faisal Karmali are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowicz and Faisal Karmali do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets, Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets, Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.